This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 445 for Tuesday, May 17th, 2016. My name is Martin Spriggs. I'm one of your hosts as we journey down the road that comes across intersections between technology and ministry, and we stop there, look around, chat about it, and helping me do that and taking the journey with me almost each and every week, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I am awesome, Martin. How are you this afternoon?
I'm well. The sun is shining. Spring is kind of close. It's in the 50s here, which is maybe all we can expect here in Wisconsin. But like the sun and like the possibilities of getting a little bit warmer weather. How about you guys?
We're good here. We're in the 60s, so hopefully we're sending it your direction. Wow. Actually had a cool weekend for MLC graduation, though, so I think some of those outdoor graduation parties were a little bit chilly this past weekend, but I'm sure nobody was complaining. Looked like a very happy day. Always exciting times when graduation and assignment services and such roll around.
Yeah, it's the big week up at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary, as I think today Vickers got their initial calls into the ministry. Those of you maybe not familiar with the call process, vicars are third-year seminarians who go out for a year and kind of an internship at a congregation, learn the ropes, and then come back for a final year, senior year, at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary with all that experience, and then they go through a final call day, which is coming up on Thursday, I want to say, where they get to find out where they're going to be serving their Lord and what people they'll be serving in the process. So a really exciting week. I can remember going through that call day twice, not knowing where I would hang my hat a couple of months later. It's a neat experience, something that tests your faith a little bit. But you put your confidence in God, and he works. He makes it all work. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I did not make it to either of the MLC graduation or assignment day service, but I did watch the assignment day online, and it's always such a, I don't know, it's almost palatable vibe in the room. There's so much excitement and anticipation, and I would say the biggest reaction was actually to some friends of mine's daughter's announcement that she was going to Anchorage, Alaska to teach, and so the whole I guess they were in the gymnasium at MLC. Everybody gasped collectively. Anchorage, Alaska. Yeah. How exciting.
Was that Leah?
It was. Yeah.
That's a former roommate of my daughter, my youngest daughter, which kind of made me feel old because all of her classmates from prep are getting calls this year. So they're going all over the place, including Anchorage, Alaska. So that's cool.
Good stuff.
Yep. We probably ought to get along with the show, and as we announced last week, this is our once-a-month community feedback show. So what we've done is we've kind of collected all the feedback we've received over the week since the last feedback show, compartmentalized it through the many social networks that we're available on, through email, through the Google group that we have for Wells Tech, through Google+, etc. Collect all those into one place, and we do a quick rundown. Some of these are from us. Some of them are from listeners, and kind of a cornucopia of different topics. We're all over the board, but I think there'll probably be something for everybody here. That's kind of what I like about the show, is that we go a lot of different directions and kind of a la carte. Just take what might work for you, give it a try. So that's why we do this show once a month.
Yep, and we should dive right in with Facebook feedback. And one of the main places that we're learning things on Facebook these days is through the Wells Intersection group. It's a group that started off from our Wells Tech conference last summer, headed up by Pastor James Aderman there in the Milwaukee area. His vision for the group, I believe, initially was just to connect locally with people in the southeastern Wisconsin area and have some face-to-face meetups. And they've done that several times, about once per quarter, I think, since Wells Tech Conference last summer. And
I think they've met three times now, which is awesome.
Yeah. Seems to be very successful, and it looks like more and more people are attending each time they meet. But then an offshoot of that would be this Facebook page they put together for Wells Intersections, and regularly sharing some great articles and food for thought. And so I'll just start by sharing my screen for those of you watching the video. If you're not, that's okay. All the links will be on the show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. A couple of articles that popped out at me from this month's postings on Intersection. First, why your nonprofit should invest in video as part of its communication strategy. Looks like a really good read. They bring up some statistics and things about how important video is in terms of communication and the return on investment and things like that. So if you are considering video as part of your ministry or outreach efforts, perhaps this is a good place to start. Why your nonprofit should invest might give you some insight and ways to engage your congregation in the discussion and the thought process and perhaps in the actual work of producing videos.
We were just talking before the show about one of our Area Lutheran High Schools who did a kind of a neat video for MLC Day. I think, and a lot of our schools are doing that, getting into that, I think the next step for our Synod is from our, you know, to take that down to the elementary school level and also to our churches. It's really not as hard as you think. A lot of the tools that we've talked about on the show can really give you a polished product without a lot of effort. And I bet there would be a number of people in most of our churches and schools who would be very interested in using their talents in that respect. And it's almost a given, Sally, that websites and social networks include some form of moving media, video per se. So I think that's something that our congregations really need to get on their radar.
Yeah. And I think that if we kind of just analyze our own habits these days, we're consuming video from online sources. And so
we're almost surprised when we don't see it there. Right?
Exactly. So yeah, it seems like a no-brainer almost, but I'm sure it has its challenges. Maybe that article will help you get started. Another article shared on the site was 11 best social media strategy ideas, like knowing your consumer, even spying on them, finding out things about them, and sites like Facebook might allow you to do some of that, to kind of zero in on the people that are looking at things that might be engaging to the message you're trying to share, that kind of thing. Don't give up. Design unique imagery. Don't be afraid of video. Here's video included on this article as well. Using social media analytical tools and tracking your progress. Looks like some really good tips for best social media strategy ideas. So, you know, a communications committee, a technology committee, maybe a combination of the two would be well served to have a more analytical approach rather than just whatever gets out there, but actually putting some strategy behind it. And this might be a good place to start.
Good.
Finally, one more article from the Intersections page, what social media influence is and why you need it. So kind of a theme here with the articles that were posted on the Intersections page this month, but certainly social media can influence and have a place in the conversations that are happening now. So definitely want to check that article out as well. And I will also do just kind of a personal, let's see if I can stop this button, personal mention of a Facebook comment that came to us this month. Just recently, following last week's show, we heard from Nina Wilson, happens to be my mom and maybe perhaps what you might call number one fan.
She's a little bit biased,
I think. Anyway, she said she enjoyed the show. This would have been last week's show, and found it funny also. Interesting, huh, Martin? We're funny, especially when I showed the locks in the story. So she's talking about when I was talking about breakout EDU and telling stories about locking things up, like I locked up my iPhone for Mother's Day and had a little fit about it until they could unlock it with the breakout process. Anyway, it made me think if we're actually supposed to be funny, the most funny thing I've experienced lately is Jeeves and Wooster by P.G. Wodehouse. I think I've talked about that a few times on the show. And I was trying to envision which one of us is Jeeves, kind of the ditzy whatever, anything goes, and which one of us is, sorry, that's Wooster, the ditzy one, and Jeeves, the no-nonsense butler who straightens everything out. And I don't know if you'd have an opinion on that. Let's see.
I'm not going there.
All right. Well, I'll just
I am a big fan of the series, though, just to, and to listen to the dramatized version with the voices and such, I think much better than actually reading it yourself. So good plug for audiobooks.
Yep. We should hop on over then to
Digo.
Digo, which is a place where folks can share links easily. And Pastor Emil Burgess did just that. He shared a link to the Fraser Spears website. He says, this is a teacher who designed and deployed the world's first whole school one-to-one iPad deployment. So everybody in the school had an iPad in their hands to do their schoolwork. He has a podcast called Canvas, where he and another guy talk about how they play and work with an iPad. And he has a podcast called Out of School and a Killer Scottish Accent. So if you're Apple ecosystem oriented in your school environment, perhaps checking out Fraser's website and listening to some of his podcast may be beneficial to you.
Yep, I've listened to them. I just started actually following that podcast, and he brings an interesting angle to it kind of because of his educational background. So they're not just talking about Apple products, but a lot of times he'll bring his own experiences of having Apple products within the institution that he's teaching in. So I think those in our audience who do that, that might be a good listen. And they're kind of funny, too. Both hosts kind of are very entertaining. So that's the Canvas podcast.
Awesome. And then I tagged one over on Digo as well. It's from our friends at Church Tech Today, 7 Steps to a More Successful Church Bulletin. And I'm guessing if we polled our audience, most everyone's still doing a printed church bulletin. Maybe a few have moved away from it to just all digital, but if you're doing a printed church bulletin, I'm guessing there's room for improvement there. There's always an opportunity to do things better. So definitely want to check out this list. Some of the things that they include are to be intentional about what you include in the bulletin. Don't just make it a laundry list and let anything get in there, but is it really useful to your readers, and is it giving them the information that they need?
Fill in space, right?
Right. Make sure you confirm the information. If somebody sends you a long link to something and you are going to take up space in your newsletter to share it, make sure the link works and that you typed it out correctly, things like that. They encourage you to include visual elements, but to let it breathe. So don't be afraid to have some white space. It makes it look a lot cleaner if you don't fill up every single drop of space. And then finally, they encourage you to track the number of bulletins that you use. And I think that's good stewardship to be aware, perhaps special circumstances come up cyclically or whatever it may be, and that you want to be able to look back and say, oh, for last Easter, we did this many and we ran out, or, you know, whatever it may be. So good tips for your church bulletin.
More analytics you have available, the better. I've often thought that if there were less in the bulletin, I'd be more likely to read it all. I think there's kind of a a balance that needs to be thought through as you're trying to cram as much as you can in there, thinking that, well, I got to get this into the hands of everybody. But chances are you're losing readership by doing that.
Yep. Next up, we are heading over to one of my very favorite social media sites.
That would be Pinterest.
Pinterest, yes.
Pinterest.
The image-heavy social media site, and we actually had a link shared with us that fit really well on Pinterest from Pastor Professor Dr. Tom Custer and his wife Judy. They found 16 things teachers should try in 2016, and it's just basically a list. And it, I enjoyed this list because I could check off a few that I've tried and could see education connections too, like Google Cardboard is on the list, sketchnoting, where people draw out images to represent talks that they've heard or whatever. So instead of just straight text notes, you have images integrated as well. Blogging and podcasting are listed, live streaming, wearables. I'm not well, I guess I do have a pedometer on my wrist, so I'm doing a little bit of the wearable thing. Start a YouTube channel. We definitely have a YouTube channel, but perhaps others would be engaged with doing that kind of thing. Google Classroom, join a Google Plus community, gamify a lesson. Breakout EDU is on the list, Martin. That's one of my favorite recent discoveries. A Voxer chat, branding, 3D printing. Yay. Let your students teach you, and a jar of awesome. I'm not quite sure what a jar of awesome is.
I don't know that either. It must be a thing, though.
Yeah, I'd like to open up a jar of awesome myself. So teachers, take note. These are some interesting things that might have an impact in your classroom.
Very nice. Right. I'm going to jump to the next category, which is our good friend Twitter. And Twitter, so I'm going to share some feedback that we received via Twitter, three of them mine and one of them from our good friend Jason Schmidt. One of them was a reference to a blog post from imore.com. They have a podcast as well as a blog, mostly about Apple products, and this blog post is definitely about the iOS ecosystem. Best photography accessories for iPhone. I think one of the shifts in photography over the past 2, 3, 4 years is the use of smartphone cameras over and against, you know, DSLRs, because the lenses on these cameras have really gotten good, and they're so much easier to carry, you know, in your pocket versus, you know, a big old camera, which you don't always need. And here are a lot of accessories that they're going through in this blog that can make that iPhone using a photography experience even better. There's all kinds of lenses that they're talking about. They have LED light systems that you can mount to the phone, cases for selfies, OloClip, which those of you that are involved in the photo challenge may be interested to know that that is potentially one of the prizes that we're giving away. I don't want to give away too much. Tripods, all kinds of stuff that can accent your iPhone photography experience. So a nice little blog post that rates these, kind of talks about what they do well and why you want maybe to consider these in your, if you have an iPhone. So
Martin, I know you enjoy DSLR photography. Have you made any switches to using mobile photography in its place? Or
I think I'm taking my DSLR fewer places. So if I'm, let's say, going down to visit the grandkids, I'm not dragging that along because I'm getting just as good pictures of, you know, that, you know, those kind of candid moments, you know, with my daughter and husband and their kids as I could with the DSLR. So there's no real setup. It's just a snap and go, and you're getting good exposure. I guess I'm finding I'm using the DSLR more for kind of very photography-focused trips. So I'll take it on vacation and go out for sunrise or sunset and grab some photos of, you know, the scenery or landscape. I'd probably do more of that kind of stuff than I do others. So I'd say, yeah, there's a purpose now for either one because I'm really happy with what I carry around in the pocket. So how about you?
Yeah, I think I'm the same way. It's very convenient to have the mobile phone with you. It's a lot smaller and less heavy. I have a really nice backpack for my DSLR, and it's when we travel or are going to something special, then I typically am inclined to grab that and take it along. I just went to the school play at MVL, our high school here in New Ulm, and I always love to take a bajillion pictures of the school play, and you just can't beat it for that kind of thing. It's just going to do so much better in the lighting situations.
Conditions and, like a school gym or something, or theater lighting, I think it's
exactly
hard to accommodate that with the small lens that's on an iPhone or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree.
So.
Yep. The next item that I wanted to share is for those of you that use Microsoft products in your school or classroom. The Office blogs, blogs.office.com, are probably a good thing to bookmark. They provide lots of great resources. They're frequently updated, and I ran across an article just last week, I think it was, talking about the roadmap area of office.com. Roadmap.office.com allows you to kind of see what's coming up. So if you are using these products and you're wondering, boy, I really wish this product, you know, whether it's Excel or Sway or PowerPoint, could do this. Maybe it's OneNote. This would really kind of help the classroom experience or the educational process, whatever. I wonder if Microsoft is thinking about that. This is the place to go. And they talk through how to filter specifically on the education items that they're putting in their products. So you go to roadmap.office.com and you set the filters. They've got all kinds of filters for the apps and for services and for platform. And once you filter down to, let's say, education, then they have a number of categories. One category is launch, so that's what's available now. You may not even be know all the things that are currently available with the product that you have. Rolling out, updates that are beginning to roll out but maybe not available to everybody. In development, which is usually the biggest section, all the things that are ahead. Things like planner apps and for Office Lens, which is an app on your phone, OneNote, inking kinds of things, Skype for Business on the Mac, those kinds of things are all listed here. And if you click on them, you can see a little bit more about what they are, what they do, and what you can expect. So good to stay on top, especially if you're in charge of implementing these solutions. And I know a number of our listeners do have Office in their schools. So this would be a good way to kind of make sure you're aware of what's coming and maybe do some planning for next year as things begin to roll out. The next thing I tweeted, the last thing that I tweeted was from our good friends at Concordia Technology Solutions. They have a blog, Technology and Your Ministry blog, and a recent article was posted there called 8 Easy Blog Post Ideas for Pastors. And they kind of go through the usual suspects like sermons, maybe unused scripture passages from your sermon study. But then they have some other ideas that could be fodder for a blog if you're a pastor thinking about doing that and wondering, oh, where do I get this content? They go through some nice examples of the subject matter that you could consider as blog material. And there really is no shortage. Pastors are in the business of content creation, and they've got the best resource ever, the Bible, so there is plenty of material to be used. You just have to kind of think of it correctly and plan it out, and I think that most pastors would not have any trouble figuring out how to make good use of a blog. So you may want to check out this blog post about pastors blogging. And last but not least, in our Twitter section, our good friend and semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, who, by the way, will be on the show next week, tweeted out about Synergies, which we've talked about on the show in the past. Synergies has just been acquired by Google, And you might remember that Synergies is a learning system, kind of an overlay to Google products. So the way it works is there's an audio, there's a little button, it's a Chrome extension. So everybody has to be using Chrome, let's say your faculty. They get a little button that I don't know exactly what the button says, but it allows you to click it to learn about the page that you're on. So if you're in Gmail, or if you're in Drive, or Sites, or Slides, or any of the Google products, you'll have this little button that says Teach Me, and then ultimately a little audio player pops up, and overlay on the screen also points to and highlights different elements on the screen, and it's just a little tutorial right on the original content that you're looking at. So it just kind of does its thing, and one of the neat things is it uses what you're already seeing. So it's not some kind of somebody else's Gmail or somebody else's slides. It's going to look at what you've got and give you hints about how best to use it. So if you're in charge of making sure that the tools that you put in the hands of your teachers is being optimally used, this might be a good product. Now, there was a charge when they were standalone, and I believe it was like $10 a year per user. Now, since Google's bought it, doesn't say anything about what's going to happen to the pricing structure. My hope and maybe my guess would be Google just throw this in as part of the experience, so they'll have a training tool built right into their products going forward. So that's good news.
Yeah. I noticed in the article it says that those that use the Synergies training report a 35% higher adoption rate. So it's Google's advantage to encourage people to adopt Google apps and things. It makes sense they would integrate that kind of training in their tools.
Makes sense they bought it, yep. Mm-hmm. And I've tried it. It does a really nice job. It's professionally done, and I think would be a nice asset and probably a time saver rather than having, you know, a whole teacher in service or whatever and trying to get everybody together and walk through the tools. This is kind of a constant companion, that little helper that somebody, you know, maybe a teacher who is not, you know, mainstream technology user, doesn't use it day in and day out, and they jump into some of these products and they don't kind of know what to do. They've got a button there that could help them.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Thanks for sharing. Next up, we heard from Walt Zimmerman, who's a member at Trinity in Mountain Home, Arkansas. And Walt wrote to us, Martin, to ask for some direction in regarding to a purchase of a video system and sound system for their small church. He's looking for the best options, and I very quickly felt over my head, out of my league. I don't know how you want to describe it, but, you know, I could share my personal experience, which maybe was the best option a few years ago when we bought certain things for our congregation or whatever it is. Better than asking me or perhaps you, Martin, not to discount your knowledge.
I'm in the same boat, Sally. I mean, I know enough to be dangerous, but I think this area moves so quickly, and there's complications based on whatever environment you're talking about. So
we defer to the experts in that area, and fortunately in our Shop Wells program, which is our collaborative buying program for the Synod, we have experts available, including AVI Systems, which is a national firm, and they specialize in specifically architecture and classroom, auditorium, video conference rooms, all of those kind of things, doing audiovisual system recommendations and such. And so it's nice to have those kind of friends, per se, in our back pocket and be able to refer our Wells friends to those. And that's exactly what I did. I sent Walt a link to the Shop Wells page. We'll include that link on the show notes as well. And, you know, don't stop there if you are looking for other things that your congregation or school or even you personally might need in areas of technology or really all different areas. Check out the Shop Wells program for that, because we have a slew of vendors involved, and they're eager to give you great pricing as part of the Wells collaborative buying effort.
Absolutely. ShopWells.net's the place to go.
Mm-hmm. All right, we should turn our attention over to our Google group. That's how you can communicate with one another easily, and we've set it up so that you can just email WellsTech at groups.wells.net. Does that sound right, Martin? And that email will go out to everyone who's subscribed to the group. So if you aren't already part of the Google group, you can visit the links we provide and join the group. And then you can read up and respond to the different emails that are shared with the group, including this one from Cindy Krieger. Cindy's a longtime listener. She was part of our Wells Tech Conference Planning Committee, just a great gal all around. And she happens to be employed in her day job for the state of Michigan, where she handles a lot of technology responsibilities for the state of Michigan. And she wrote recently to say that she had been assigned the task to work to learn what we need to do and how we need to be ADA compliant in our digital documents. So I believe there's like whole new standards perhaps that are coming out around ADA or American Disabilities Act compliance and website ideas and things like that. For you to kind of comprehend and hopefully up your game so that your documents, your websites and things are compliant. So it sounds like Cindy's just kind of volunteering to be a reference if anyone's looking into those kind of things or looking for resources or whatever it may be. She's got some expertise and we'll be continuing to develop that. So
very important thing to consider as you're building your websites or apps or whatever it is, to be as compliant as possible. About 3 or 4 years ago, I met with a couple. I think the spouse was totally blind, and her husband almost the same place. And they really gave us some nice tips about how screen readers work and the importance of coding correctly. And if you're using a tool like Final Web or whatever, there are things built into that that allow you, if used, to make it so much easier for somebody who is visually impaired to navigate your site. And certainly not an audience that you want to forget about. So something worth, and there's a lot of stuff online that'll help you do that. And sometimes just as easy as filling out some of the appropriate metadata for an element, maybe it's an image or a headline or whatever. Just makes a lot of sense to spend just a little bit extra time, learn about it, and just make sure your website or whatever it is that you're building digitally is compliant.
All right, next up from our Google group was a communication from you, Martin, regarding some house cleaning at the Center for Mission Ministry and the fact that there's a number of audiovisual technical type items which are available for basically purchase.
Yep. And we've got, you know, when we made the move, we had to pull some cameras out of the old building, and there were some microphones that we hadn't used. We had gone on to some other things. So there's some cabling, some wireless mics, so 4 cameras I think we've got. They aren't HD, so maybe they're not the latest and greatest, but they are able to be controlled remotely. They're not useful outdoors, so they're indoor kinds of things. There's some lenses involved with them as well. So if you're interested, go join the Google group and take a look at the listing that's out there if you're interested.
And then finally, there was some communication back and forth regarding the new HymnSoft software. I say new, it's probably been out a year or two now already, but I remember having Carl Nolte from Northwestern Publishing House on our show to talk about the software. And apparently the software relies on QuickTime as the player of the audio files that are included. And it seems that perhaps Apple is going to be abandoning QuickTime, if I read the communications correctly, and
they no longer really support it and suggest people don't use it. And there is a bug that's been discovered, so it could be dangerous to run
security. A security risk for sure. And so Ryan just asked, you know, if anyone had any expertise in that area, and someone did respond with some information about ways you can use the audio files that are part of QuickTime part of HymnSoft without using QuickTime, perhaps playing them with Windows Media Player or something else on your computer. So there's some direction there. It looks like NPH is consulting with their programmers and maybe coming out with some more formal direction in the future.
Yeah, typically there isn't an issue. If you still want to use QuickTime on Windows, I would suggest just being careful. Take maybe that computer that you're using it on. So if you're using it for playback in your in a church setting, just don't connect to the internet and you'll be safe.
Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on then, we visited our Google communities. There's a community called Wells Google Schools. And in that community, let's see, James Karlofsky shared an article on Google Classroom Schedule That Assignment, a new feature. So scheduling your post, in other words, creating a post and setting a future date for it to be released to the class. So there's a new button as you're setting up your post in Google Classroom that allows you to do that. And then we also heard from Joshua Johnson, who's a professor at WLC, with more ways for schools and organizations to manage YouTube. So different YouTube settings, being able to whitelist certain channels, and more options for Google Apps administrators as you work with it. There's also YouTube for Schools, which they announced last it's going away. YouTube for Schools is going away as of July 1, 2016. So they're relying more on these settings and things to be able to manage it than having that carved out area. So a few announcements from Google for Education in regard to YouTube. And then finally, over in that group, there was a question from John Dorn. I want to say he's down at Illinois Lutheran Schools.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he said he was wondering what everyone is using for student planners. Do you purchase paper planners? We're considering not purchasing paper anymore because of the many Chromebook apps. So especially for schools that have gone one-to-one with Chromebooks, does it make sense to continue to have the students do their planning in a paper, spiral-bound notebook, or whatever it may be? And there was some good conversation around that. Different people kind of chimed in and said, no, we aren't doing it, or perhaps it requires some buy-in from teachers and the teachers to kind of lead the way to getting the students to use the electronic tools, that kind of thing. So good conversations there if you aren't part of that Wells Google Schools community, but you're using Chromebooks and Google Apps. I encourage you to head over and ask to join the community. We'll have a link in our show notes, and if you just ask, they'll definitely let you in. So, and then it's like having a whole bunch of friends to collaborate with in your one-to-one implementation of Chromebooks or whatever. You know, it doesn't have to be one-to-one, but your implementation of Chromebooks in the classroom. So good stuff. A parallel group would be the Office 365 group that's available over on Google+. And there, Perry Lund shared an article about SharePoint going mobile with a new app this year. So with SharePoint and the OneDrive experience on the Microsoft Office 365 side of things, they're trying to really stay in the game with their mobile apps, making it very user-friendly and intuitive to interact with your data and collaborate with others. So definitely a whole ecosystem around the Office use in classrooms especially. And so check this out if you're perhaps an Office 365 school. So.
And as you kind of alluded to, Microsoft is really trying hard on both Apple or iOS platform and Android platform, probably even to the almost the exclusion of their own Windows Phone platform, because this is where all the people are. So they're quality apps. They really have done a nice job. It's not like they're second-class citizens just because they're competing companies. They've done a nice job with these apps. We've talked maybe about some of the other ones, the whole Office Suite, Outlook, et cetera. They run really well on some of these platforms.
Very good. Well, I kind of am worn out, Martin. That was a lot of community feedback to share this week. Exciting stuff, and we just encourage our listeners to keep it coming, because that's how we learn here on Wells Tech is actually from the audience. Don't rely on us or you'd be kind of up the creek, but share what's working for you, and we're happy to pass it along to everyone via the podcast.
Yep. Don't be shy. Let's move on to news in tech.
Yep, a couple of items we tagged as newsy this week. The first one is an article from ZDNet, how to lock in your free Windows 10 upgrade and keep using your old Windows. Yeah, so when Windows 10 came out almost a year ago now, and they allowed anyone who had a previous version, Windows 7 or 8, to download Windows 10 for free, download and install it. But that year is almost up, and I know there's probably plenty of folks out there who haven't made the switch.
And what needs to happen for you to keep that copy? Let's say you're not ready to upgrade by the end of July. Let's say you want to keep using your Windows 7 or Windows 8, and you know, but don't want to lose that freebie that that Microsoft gave you. The instructions there on the site walk you through actually doing an install of Windows 10 and then rolling it back to whatever operating system you had before, and that will apply that license or attach that license for Windows 10 to that piece of hardware that you're using. And then when the time comes, you know, let's say it's next fall or summer, whatever, you will still have the ability to rerun that update and get your Windows 10 even though it's past July 29th. So kind of future-proofing the experience. But it is it can take an hour or so to do this process, but if you're not quite ready to make the move, this is a way to kind of secure that license for the future.
Right, and I would guess pricing of Windows 10 maybe is $120 range,
yeah,
or something
the low
like
100s,
that.
Even
so you're saving some money there.
Yep.
All right, one more thing that came out of our friends over at TechSmith, and it's an end of support notice. This is kind of a sad kind of announcement that comes out occasionally from these companies, and TechSmith has a lot of great products. It looks like they are going to stop supporting ScreenChomp, Nomania.com, and Teach Apps, and the Google Chrome browser extension for Snagit.
Yep, so apparently they trotted these out in beta. A lot of them were in beta and decided that there wasn't a lot of use for them. ScreenChomp and Nomia, I believe, were both iPad apps that they wanted to see if there was any traction that could be gained. And if you're familiar with the TechSmith, they're all about kind of screen capture, screen recording, that kind of thing. And then the Snagit, we're all familiar with Snagit. They had a Chrome extension that would do screen capture, and I think they've integrated that kind of into their regular Snagit product. So I don't think they saw the need for that Chrome extension. So if you're using any of those products, you will want to take a look at that and understand what's going to go on with those.
All right.
By the way, they did in that release, they did announce a 50% discount for EDUs on some of their products. So if you're interested in Snagit or Camtasia or those kinds of things, and if you are an EDU, you can get 50% discount until June 10th.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Thanks for reading the fine print for us. All right, now we'll move on to some Wells news. What's happening now in Wells is it's time to sign up for the Women's Ministry Conference. This is going to come up at the end of July, July 21st through 23rd, and the focus of the conference is going to be on mentoring a Christian woman who lovingly shares her faith and life through relationships to build up fellow believers and to show Christ to unbelievers. The conference will happen at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary, and you can head over to the link we include in the show notes to learn more about it. And there's even a little introductory video there, I think, as well. So if you're interested in attending the Women's Ministry Conference, I think it was even the subject of the May Wells Connection, just trying to get the word out about this conference and the registration that is happening currently.
Very nice. Sally, I think it's that time in the show where we do our picks of the week, where Sally and I try and figure out something to share. And I think both of us were kind of struggling this week, but I think we both found something useful that our listeners will maybe enjoy. So what was your pick this week?
Well, my pick this week centers on the use of Excel. And, you know, sometimes when I struggle with something to share, Martin, it's because I've been really busy doing stuff. And and this week I've been really busy and done a lot of work in Excel. And I thought, well, that's a good thing to share with everyone, because I think a lot of people just think of Excel as a way to add up numbers, do a budget or something to that effect. But Excel can do a lot of things with a lot of good data. So I have an example spreadsheet here, and I just thought I'd show you a few really simple tricks, and maybe you know all of these already, but one of them is, oftentimes I have data like this example, a listing of churches with their cities and states in rows and columns in a spreadsheet. And one of the things that I like to do is something called freeze panes. So if I jump down to the first row of data and I go to the View tab in Excel, I can click a freeze panes button. And then that top row, the header row, that title row of my data stays in place as I scroll up and down in the data. And that's sometimes helpful. You can freeze columns as well, so that as you're scrolling around large sets of data, you can easily keep the context in mind. Another thing that I often like to do is just sort the data. And so if you're looking at my screen, the data set that I'm playing with is sorted alphabetically, a list of churches. Perhaps I'd prefer to sort them on city and state. So I would highlight columns of it and go over to the sort and filter option on the home tab. And quickly and easily I can sort alphabetically on whatever column is highlighted. But I can also go into custom sort, and I can choose different things to sort on. So I could sort first on state, for instance, and then within the state, I can tell it to sort by the city name. So I get an alphabetical listing with the states alphabetical and then the cities. And in this case, the states include Canadian locations as well. So just a quick example of that. And then finally, working with data, I oftentimes want to find certain things easily. For instance, I might want to find all of the listings in a particular city. And I use filtering to do that. And that one maybe is one that's not quite so known or used by folks. It is, again, under that home tab, sort and filter. So I highlight a particular column and then I turn on filtering, and that column, just real subtly, it got a little drop down arrow in the header area of that column. And when I click on that arrow, I can sort by color. So if I've applied different colors to the data, I can sort by that. But I can also unselect all the cities that are there and perhaps just search for a particular city like New Ulm, and say just select the ones with New Ulm, and then I get a filtered look at all the churches that are in the New Ulm area. So those other listings in my document didn't go away. I still have the full 1,399 lines, but I have filtering turned on to just show me a few of those. And I can easily pop back into that filter and say select all again, and then everything reappears magically. One more thing I might want to do is get a unique listing of some of my data. So I copied my list of cities to another spreadsheet in my workbook, and there's a quick and easy button on the data tab that says remove duplicates. So my 1,399, if I ask it to remove the duplicates of cities, it found 420 duplicates and removed them, and now I'm down to just 979 unique values. So sometimes it's nice just to be able to get the unique values of the data, and that remove duplicates button on the data tab is the way to do that. So that's my crash course on Excel. I will tell you that I found some Excel resources online, particularly about filtering, because that one is kind of a multi-step process, and I'm going to share those links in the show notes. So check it out. I think one idea that comes to mind that congregations would use spreadsheets is if they're collecting data using forms, because oftentimes that form data writes to a spreadsheet, and maybe once you're done collecting the data, you want to be able to filter it, to sort it certain ways, to find unique instances and things like that. So this is where those tips might come in handy.
Yeah, even depending on what kind of church management software you use, or if you don't use any, good way to do some things with membership rosters, those kinds of things, if you're trying to sort by, you know, for elder calls or that kind of stuff, all kinds of use for Excel. So, and we should say that there are some similar features in other programs. Google Sheets has some of this, but I would say Excel is still pretty much king
Cadillac.
When it comes to slicing and dicing data. So,
yeah, fun stuff and capable of so much.
Yep. Spoken like a true math teacher.
Definitely.
My pick of the week is for all you Chrome users, and I know there are a number of you. I use Chrome pretty much every day. It's my kind of go-to browser for lots of things that we've talked about over the past years. I love the extensions, some of the tooling and flexibility that it has. Not perfect, but I think it's the best one of all the browsers that I've used. But one of the features that you may already be aware of because you've seen it is this apps link. And it usually appears in the leftmost position in the browser bar if you show your bookmarks. When you hover over it, the tooltip says show apps. And there is a whole ecosystem of extensions that you're aware of. Those appear in the upper right, but the apps are a little bit different. And many of them simply just go to web apps that are on the web, but they make it, they kind of emulate an application experience, like it were a local app. And there's all kinds of ones that you can add. If you go to the web store, when you look at the web store, they even break these down in the upper left when you do searches. So they have apps, games, extensions, themes. So if you just do a little bit of hunting around, you can find probably all the ones that you use. And I've kind of built this as a screen where I can have one-click access to the tools I use the most, like Gmail or YouTube or Google Photos or Google Drive or OneNote Online, Facebook, TweetDeck, PicMonkey, Google Hangouts, Google Plus, Postman, Weatherbug, anything that you can find in the App Store for Google, you can put it on this page. You could have multiple pages for this. Just kind of a nice way to emulate an app experience within a browser. One extension that I wanted to highlight related to this is called Show Apps in New Tab. A while back when Chrome was updated, they took away the ability to have this this apps page, this apps menu appear when you opened up a new tab. But this plugin or this extension allows you to get that back. So when I open up a new tab, I can quickly get basically to my menu and I can go right to whatever favorite app that I have. So this is kind of a cool tool that's just baked into Chrome. And now with that extension, you can have that come up and act like a kind of a launch pad for your apps. Along with this, there's also a start menu icon that can be put down in your taskbar that would pop up this same in a little bit of a window so that you can launch those favorite apps. So just kind of a little freebie that I think Google just wants you to obviously get to your apps as quickly as possible. And if you haven't looked at what apps are available within the Google or the web store, take a look. There's a lot of shortcuts there that could make your life a little bit easier.
Good stuff. Sally, I'm all about easy. No, I haven't. When I click new tab, I get the Google search bar.
Google search, right.
So that's
which
a lot
you really don't need, because if you just start typing on a new tab, you're searching from the browser bar anyway, so it's kind of redundant to have it unless you really want to see the Google Doodle every day. So
I guess that's a motivation, but no.
Right. But that's usually, if it's need, it's usually shared over social networks anyway. So
sure.
Let's move to ministry resources, Sally.
A couple of talented artists to talk about today. First, Carissa Nelson. We've actually had Carissa on the show before and just realized she has vendor site over on her CarissaNelsonArt.com site. She has one area of her site dedicated to worship art. And she's got a freebie even available currently, God's Word Worship Art Package. It's an example of the different packages that she has available. Normally this would cost $3. It looks like you get some PowerPoint type slides so that you can use them for worship projection, but then you get the images as standalone in both color and black and white. And she has an example here of how you can use it as a bulletin art bulletin art image. And so if you browse her site, then you're going to see lots of these different worship art collections, all of them priced around $3 each. But for different events in the church year and things, perhaps it's for something special or whatever it may be, it looks like she's got a lot of the church year covered. So some really beautiful artistic work there. And not to ignore the fact that we also have another Wells Tech friend, Ian Welch, who runs a site called Paramentics, and he has some really clean and beautiful Christian art for churches and schools available as well. And so he's got symbols, he's got things you can use for print, just lots of different resources here.
Lots of stuff.
Yep. Definitely. So yeah, two that we definitely wanted to get on our ministry resources page so that people can continue to discover the great artwork that they're putting out there.
Very nice.
Yep.
Sally, we are in the home stretch of the show, which means time for our featured video.
And we do have a featured video for this week. You can head over to wellstech.wells.net to watch it. It's actually a Together update that was filmed back in March, but we haven't talked about it yet, and we thought it tied well to the Wells Now event we mentioned earlier. Its focus is on the Women's Ministry Conference, and they're actually speaking with Naomi Schmidt, one of the leaders in the Women's Ministry area of Wells, and she talks all about the conference, what folks can expect if they are able to attend that conference at the end of July at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary. So check it out and check the show notes for the links to get registered.
Sally, there's going to be a show 446. What are we doing?
Well, you mentioned earlier that Jason Schmidt is going to be joining us for that show. Always look forward to that. It's actually kind of our wrap-up show of educational technology for this school year. And Jason is going to talk with us about outdoor and rainy day indoor activities for students that involve technology. So some things outside might be things like geocaching and other outdoor type activities. And then some rainy day things, maybe things just to have at your fingertips. If things don't go quite as planned, you can pull out some technology adventures for your students to explore. So sounds like good stuff for all of our listeners, not just teachers, but all types might enjoy some of these resources. So tune in next week.
Looking forward to having Jason, Mr. Sunshine, on the show.
That's right.
That's going to about do it for this week. We really appreciate you tuning in each and every week. Make sure you're sharing this with your friends. I think there's good stuff that goes on, and we're gonna come back next week and do it all again. Thank you so much for joining us. Say goodbye, Sally.
Goodbye, Sally. Goodbye, Martin.
Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.